shoulder fake to the rack. Oh, my goodness. Wayne Wade.
Caps up a three.
Bam! Jimmy Butler's big time onion.
Side jumper off the mark.
Oh, back of right hand. Felicia right in the mug of Miles Plumlee.
Throw it.
Oh, my.
Down,
gosh.
Big man. Throw it down.
On the new home of the Chicago Bulls, this is Chicago Bulls Live. And now, here's Steve Cashel.
Welcome in, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cash. A lot going on in the show, but first we begin with Chuck Swirsky. Chuck usually doing a lot of our interviews here on Chicago Bulls Live with yours truly. And Chuck, we're turning the tables. I get to interview you and Chuck, of course, our outstanding radio play-by-play voice of the Chicago Bulls and a great teammate here on our broadcast team. But Chuck, it's not your first rodeo with the Bulls, correct? You go back many years.
We do. Back to 1981, Tommy Edwards, the PA announcer for the Chicago Bulls, accepted a radio job, I believe, in Boston, Steve. And so they had auditions for the PA position with the Bulls. And I got a call from Brian McIntyre. And Brian McIntyre said, listen, you're one of the list of candidates on a list, and we need you to come down to Chicago Stadium. And Rod Thorne, the general manager, is going to be in attendance. We're going to give you a script of names and maybe 15-second reads, and we'll see where it goes. So I went to Chicago Stadium. I'll never forget this. And as I am, you know, telling the story right to your face, Steve, I can see the day it happened, and we went through about 2 minutes. We got done with it. Rod said, I think that's good. And Brian says, okay, you're good to go.
What did it mean?
And it meant a lot.
Did you get the job right there?
Right. Well, they said they wanted to go through a couple more people, but they said, you know, it was pretty good, and we'll get back to you. And so I said, okay. And the next thing I know, I'm doing the public address for the Chicago Bulls, led by Artis Gilmore, Reggie Theus. The other two players that I really kind of gravitated to because they were hard-nosed players, Ricky Silvers, Bobby Wilkerson, Scott May was on that club, and then Larry Keenan joined the club, Kobe Dietrich joined the club. There were a lot of different moving pieces to that organization with the Bulls back in the early 80s, but they did make the playoffs, and they played the Knicks, Steve, in a best of three. They actually had a playoff round with a best of three.
I remember.
And in 81, they beat the Knicks at the Garden, came back to Chicago Stadium, and I still maintain to this day it's the loudest I've ever heard Chicago Stadium. And they beat the Knicks on a Friday night, and then they played Boston, got swept by Larry Bird and company, but it was a crazy, crazy playoff series with the Knicks.
And Chuck, how long were you the PA announcer at the stadium?
3 years.
Okay.
Because I was employed at a radio station in Chicago, and I was also doing DePaul. And, you know, there were conflicts, obviously. And so the people, which I totally get, said, listen, you have a choice. You either do DePaul or you're going to do the Bulls. And because I love play-by-play, I stayed with DePaul.
Wow. All right, so take us from that PA job and your other broadcasting work. Where'd you go next?
Well, I mean, I was sports director at WGN Radio. And then in 1994, I received a call to go to the University of Michigan and be the sports director at WJR. And to be honest with you, Steve, I really didn't want to leave GN, but our rights fees, as you know, and holders and whatnot, people way out of my control. DePaul was leaving WGN. Northwestern was joining the radio station in the mid-90s. And Dan Fabian told me at that time, listen, you can stay here as long as you want. I was doing Morning Drive Sports with Bob Collins, who was an institution, as you know, in the
sure.
city. And I was doing pre-half post for the Bears radio network, pre and post on the Cubs radio network. I was doing everything under the sun for the radio station, but I wanted to do play-by-play. And to jump from DePaul to the University of Michigan and do other things for the radio station in Detroit, but especially Michigan, was the nuts and bolts of the job. And it was incredible. I did pre and post for football, and they had just started their run, led by Charles Woodson. And to be around that club, and then a couple of years later, Tom Brady. And if somebody told me to this day that Tom Brady was going to be Tom Brady,
I agree.
Say, you're nuts.
I know.
I mean, he was a good college quarterback. I never expected this. So with basketball, though, I was able to do the tail end of the Fab Five. And then the second class that featured Gerard Ward, Robert Traylor, Maurice Taylor, and on and on and on. So it was great. It really was a terrific experience. And then from there, I did the Raptors for 10 years.
TV or radio?
I started in radio for a year, and then we went to simulcast for the second season, which was difficult because it's a combination, as you know, Steve, of radio and TV, and the final 8 years on TV.
Interviewing Chuck Swirsky, I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live. Chuck taking us through his broadcast career. And then how did you land this position, Chuck, as play-by-play radio voice with the Chicago Bulls?
We finished a playoff series, the Raptors, in 2008 against Orlando. And the Raptors were eliminated in five games. And it was the Wednesday after our Monday loss. And I'm playing actually basketball with two of my kids on the driveway at our home in Toronto. And I get a call from the Raptors. And they said, hey, last year it was Seattle, now it's Toronto. And I had no idea what they were talking about because I was offered the Sonics job in 2007, but I knew that they were 1 foot out the door going to Oklahoma City. And Seattle would have been enticing because that's where I grew up. That was my hometown favorite team growing up as a kid.
Sure.
But I didn't want to move to Oklahoma City. Nothing against Oklahoma City, but I didn't want to take three kids. And, Steve, you have a young family. At the time, my kids were in elementary school and junior high.
Hard to move.
And I did not want to move them from Chicago to Seattle, Seattle to Oklahoma City. But then the Bulls called, and Steve Shamwald said, how would you like to come back to Chicago? And I said, sure. And it was tough leaving the Raptors. I love Toronto. I love the Raptors organization. Many, many friends there. We had a great infrastructure of people in our neighborhood. But when the Bulls call, you got to listen. So I left.
Absolutely. Visiting with Chuck Swirsky, I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Chuck, take us through a day. Maybe people don't know, they hear you, obviously, with the play-by-play call and joining myself and Bill Wennington here on the pregame and the postgame shows. And, of course, during the game, you do a marvelous job. But the day starts early, doesn't it?
Well, the day starts early. It actually starts even before then. So, for example, whether it's Brooklyn, Atlanta, Philadelphia, it doesn't matter what team, I watch their previous three games just so I get a feel for players' rotations, minutes, where they like the ball on the floor. Because with these interchangeable parts now, Steve, with different players coming in, some players like to get the ball in different spots with other players on the floor. And I would be cognizant of that. And also trends. Who's on the floor at crunch time the last 2 minutes of each quarter? How is a coach substituting players? What player right now is in a zone? So all these things factor into my prep. And then, of course, you go online, you just try to absorb as much as you can. And then on game day, I usually get up early, very early. I work out at 4 a.m.
Wow.
I go to daily mass at Holy Name Cathedral. Usually go to 6 or 7 a.m. mass. And then I make my way down to the United Center. Normally about 9:30, 9:45 in the morning, we have a shoot-around that goes from 10 to 11. And after shoot-around for Bulls TV, Bulls Radio Network, we interview the head coach, Fred Hoiberg. Sometimes I'll do a second interview for a road game or if we tape something for Bulls TV. And then that's over at about 11:30, 11:45. Some days we do a clinic here for a corporate partner that gets underway at about 2 o'clock or so. So I'll just grab a sandwich, stay here, do a clinic, and then the game starts. And that means 4 o'clock. And that's when we see our engineer, Bill Carambella, setting up. And I already have grabbed my section of the table, and he has to readjust everything and arrange things differently because I got in his way. But and then we talk to players, scouts, coaches, whatnot. And then the game starts. Afterwards, we go and do more Bulls TV work in the locker room. So I'm here usually from about 9:30 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night.
Trying to get some sleep then because you were up at 4 in the morning.
I get 5 hours a night.
Wow. Do you do the same on the road when the Bulls travel?
I do that on the road as well. Yes, I do.
Wow. So, Chuck, final question. we always get asked by young, up-and-coming broadcasters or people that want to get into the business, what's the best way? What do you suggest? Internship? What's the best way to try to get into this business? Because it's increasing with all the different outlets and smartphones and everything, but it's still very challenging and competitive.
Yes, it is. Well, you know what, Steve? Just like you have a story, I have a story. Our engineers have a story. Everyone has a different story. And that's the beautiful thing about entering our business, because it's not a cookie-cutter operation. You know, for me, I wanted to be a sports broadcaster at five. I was not a good athlete. I got cut from every team, the only teams I ever made. When my mom put down $10 for CYO basketball and $10 for Little League baseball, that's the only teams I ever made. So I would suggest, number one, you got to have a passion. And for young people, whether it's broadcasting, whether it's in the automotive business, whether it's insurance, whether it's anything in life, be the best you can possibly be. Have passion. If you have passion, you'll never go to work a day in your life. But for this business, it is competitive, it's challenging, but it's also fun. And it's a joy to meet people like yourself, Steve, who do a great job, and I'm not patronizing you. Our history goes way back. But I would really suggest that you learn as much as you can. You ask questions. I get links every day from young people saying, can you review my work? Can you listen? Can you give me suggestions? I'm always open to that. I've never turned down one young man, young lady who has said, I need help. I want information about how to get in the business. Can you hear my work? Because I've walked in their shoes. And all it takes is one person to say, hey, I want to assist you. And I think that if you can start off, and do as much as you can and network, good days are ahead.
Great stuff, Chuck. Appreciate it.
All right, Steve.
Chuck Swirsky, our Bulls radio play-by-play voice. I'm Steve Cashel. Back with more of Chicago Bulls Live after this on WLS AM 890.
To make your drive home a little easier, Steve Dahl is here. 2 till 6 every weekday afternoon on WLS AM 890. Now back to Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome in, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. But we begin with Bulls official scorekeeper Bob Rosenberg, who has been with the Bulls since day one. Here's more with Chuck Swirsky.
So, Bob, 51 years on the job. Let's go back to the inaugural season. First year of the Chicago Bulls. How did you get your job?
Well, I did the Zephyrs and the Packers, which is now the Washington Bullets. When they moved, I wrote a letter to Dick Klein. And he sent me back, saw that I had 2 years' experience.
And Dick Klein was the owner.
Correct, of the Bulls. And he saw I had 2 years' experience and says, come on down. I've been there ever since.
Ever since. So, I mean, give me an idea of being an official scorer before we get into the Bulls in the early years. You were with the Zephyrs and the Packers, professional basketball.
It was the same team, Swirs. The first year they were named the Packers. The second year, they changed the name to Zephyrs, but it was the same team.
That's a little strange, Packers, knowing the rivalry with the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago teams, in this case, the Bears. But
the reason they were called the Packers were they played at the amphitheater where the slaughterhouse was.
Yes, and we're going to talk about the amphitheater in a moment. So when you first started scoring basketball games, I mean, did you just walk in and say, I'd like to keep track of points, rebounds, I've got a book and I can do that for you? How does one become an official scorer way back in the day?
Well, I did it in high school. And
well, high school was that?
Evanston. When I went, the Sox had a game that day and it was raining. I went up to the Packers office, see how much tickets were. I talked to Jack Burnett, who was the PR guy. We talked a couple hours. And he asked me if I could keep score of basketball. I said, yeah. So he hired me.
And the rest, as we know, is a great story because you're with the Chicago Bulls 51 years. You get the job with the Bulls, okay? And do you remember opening night?
Yeah, it was against the San Francisco Warriors.
So the San Francisco October Warriors, 18th, known by San Francisco, right, at the time. And what was it like opening night? Where was the game? What do you remember about opening night?
It was at the amphitheater. And I remember about the game was there was a fan who had a pet dog, and it was there in the front row of the seats.
So let me get this straight. It's opening night, Bulls, an expansion team, playing the San Francisco Warriors at the amphitheater, and a fan brings his dog to the game.
Correct. He was sitting in the front row behind me. I guess they were allowed to bring him in. It wasn't the one, the kind that you bring when you're blind. It was a regular dog, because I got the pictures at home.
And how much were tickets? Do you remember, Bob?
Yes, $3, $4. You won't see that now, Swirsk.
And what do you remember most about opening night? Here you are. You're the official scorer of the new expansion Chicago Bulls. You're at the table, and you're witnessing the first ever basketball game of the Chicago Bulls.
Well, I remember that I was a little nervous because, you know, here's a new team. And at that time, I was doing rebounds, assists, shots, and turnovers. Well, we didn't have turnovers then, but I was doing all that plus the scoring. And my late wife was doing the visiting team.
So you were keeping score for the Chicago Bulls, and your wife, rest her soul, she was keeping score for the opposing team.
Correct.
On the scorers table.
Correct.
And you mentioned turnovers. You didn't keep turnovers in those days?
No, turnovers didn't come really until the ABA folded, when we picked up the three-point attempts, turnovers, blocked shots, three-point attempts.
Are you talking about the merger in the mid-70s?
Okay. Yes.
So you're the official scorer. What was opening night? Were there a lot of fans? Was it a sparse crowd?
There was about 4,300 fans, if I could recall.
At the amphitheater?
Correct.
And the amphitheater, describe the amphitheater.
Well, it was a cozy place. It held about 9,000. And every seat in the place was pretty nice and cozy. It was a pretty nice place.
And did it have like a feel of an old barn, or was
No, 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 no. It's a basketball.
It was a place. Basketball.
Yeah,
arena.
Because the Packers played there too, before they moved. But it was a cozy place. It was good enough for basketball.
Bob, when the Bulls became an expansion ball club, was there a buzz in the city about the Bulls coming as an expansion team in the NBA? Or was it, okay, we've been there, done that, we've tried pro ball. I'm not sure whether or not pro ball can be a happening event in the city of Chicago.
Well, the fans weren't really excited. They still thought Traeger from the Packers, Zephyr, should have stayed at least another year, because the attendance picked up the second year, and he bolted out of Chicago.
And you're talking about the owner.
Correct.
All right,
but the fans weren't that excited yet. After, I would say, maybe a month or so, they got excited. I mean, the fans wanted to see the Knicks that year because they got Cassie Russell.
Who's from Chicago.
Correct. And they tore the doors down at the amphitheater when they came in. Had over 8,000 people.
And what did the amphitheater seat?
I would say the biggest crowd we've had in there was a little over 9,000.
And during those days, Bill Russell was still playing for the Boston Celtics?
Correct.
And Wilt Chamberlain was still a very active player in those days, right?
Yes.
With Philadelphia?
All the big stars, Bob Pettit, Havlicek, Ramsey, Heinsohn, you name them.
And you saw them all.
Correct.
You saw Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as a rookie. You've seen everyone as a rookie. So Bob, it's opening night. Who was on the floor for the Bulls? Do you remember the starting five?
Yes, it was Sloan, Guy Rogers, Irwin Muller,
yeah.
Jimmy Washington, and Don Kogis.
Don Kogis, the former Marquette star, who later went on to suit up for another expansion ball club, the Seattle Supersonics. Yes.
No, San Diego.
Okay.
And he left here because one of the newspaper writers tried to talk him into leaving Chicago, that he didn't really have a good chance here, which he really did.
Hmm. So, again, opening night, Warriors, Bulls, you just announced the starting lineup. Do you have the program from that game? Do you have the official box score of that game?
Schwartz, I have the home program from every Bulls home game since they started.
Wait a minute, let me get this straight. You have every program, home program, of the Chicago Bulls from opening night.
All the way
from
through
1966, 67, yep. The opening night.
All the way through last year.
And where are they? I mean, Bob, that's lot of programs.
What, I have
I mean,
them
how big a house do you have?
3,600 square feet.
Oh, wow.
I have them in big office supply cabinets. And I got all the box scores since day one.
Every box
home
score
and
the Bulls,
road. Yeah.
Of the Chicago Bulls. And so they're in boxes. What are you going to do
no,
with
no.
them?
No, no. They're not in boxes. They're in a filing cabinet.
They're in a
if
filing cabinet.
If I
got
to get to it, or if they need them here, Tim Hallam and them, I got to, I'll dig it out and make
copies. So if I wanted to see the program of Michael Jordan's opening night, 1984, against Washington, I believe, you've got that program.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I mean, are you going to do you keep them because it's important to you, or do you keep them with a vision one day of, you know what, maybe I'm going to put my grandchildren through school, or do you have any?
Well, right now, Jack, I keep them because what I do, every game that I've worked, or that I put the play-by-play, the box in there, and the newspaper clippings the next day. After the game, and
so,
I put them all in there.
So the game is over. Next morning in the trip or sometimes, you clip out the story of the game. You put that inside the program along with the box score of the game, mm-hmm. and you've saved everyone since you started. The 66-67 team, very, very competitive. Did they make the playoffs that year?
Yes, they're the only expansion team to win 33 games. That's the most ever.
And they played 82 back then.
Correct. No, they were, what was it?
They play 80 somewhere
around. I think it was 80.
Okay.
But
they made the playoffs that year.
And their second game, people don't even know this. You may know. They played at the old Chicago Coliseum on 14th and Wabash.
I did not know that.
Yes. On March 23rd, 67, against the St. Louis Hawks.
And you're talking about the playoffs. They played a playoff game. I assume the Coliseum is no longer there. They tore it down, probably.
Correct.
Time for a short break here on Chicago Bulls Live. When we come back, part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with Bulls official scorer Bob Rosenberg. Stay with us on WLS AM 890.
Everything you need to start your week smarter and happier. Big John and Ray. Monday morning starting at 5 on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and beyond. I'm Steve Cashel. Now we present part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with Bulls official scorekeeper Bob Rosenberg.
What I'll always remember about that period before Jordan, the classiness of a guy like Rod Thorne. Rod Thorne was a good, good man.
Yes, he was.
I mean, he is, to me, one of the finest gentlemen. And by his own admission, he looks back at some of the draft picks. I mean, Ronnie Lester had a knee situation. Quentin Daly had off-the-court issues, as we know. Orlando Woolridge had some inconsistencies, but he drafted Michael Jordan. When Jordan came here, did you have any relationship with him when he would check in? Was he always focused, or would he kind of kibitz with you?
We talked, and then as he asked me if I would do his scrapbook for him, because I did Love, Sloan, Rogers, Van Leer. I said, sure. So I was doing his scrapbook for him ever since he started here.
So his rookie year, 84-85, and he sees you every ball game. Because, Bob, have you ever missed a game, by the way?
Yes. Two. In March 31st of 2000 and April 2nd, because Major League Baseball asked me to be the official scorer for the Mets-Cubs opening series in Tokyo, Japan.
Wait a minute. Major League Baseball asked you to get on a plane, fly over to Tokyo to be the official scorer for a game featuring the Mets and the Cubs?
Two-game series opening of the 2000 season. I was there 14 days.
You were there 14 days?
Everything. Major League Baseball.
So they took care of everything.
And that was the year we won only 13 games. I almost was not going to go.
But so you missed a game during that span, and the other game you missed was?
Both was that same week.
So other than that, I mean, you've never been ill. Or if you
I've been here.
But you've been here. So let's go back. So Jordan wants you to put a scrapbook together, and you did that for every season he played here.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. But he took care of me, so.
How did he take care of you?
That I won't
say. You're not going to reveal it? Not right. Even on our podcast?
No.
Bob, okay. I thought we might get a scoop here. Well, I mean, do you stay in touch with Michael, or is that
no,
once he left?
If he comes here, and when I go into the Bulls locker room, he's usually hiding in there in the back where the writers aren't allowed.
Okay. During that run of championships, how crazy was it here in Chicago, first at the stadium and then at the United Center?
It was something else, Chuck. And I'm glad that I was fortunate enough to be here for those 6 years that we won. It's hard to even think about it, what it was.
Because where you sit, Bob, you have the best seat in the house. You were at midcourt, and you see everything. So once the game is over, when they won championships in Chicago, you were right there and saw the confetti coming down. You saw the players embracing. You saw the crowd get into it. It's wild. It is a wild championship celebration.
Correct. And then I take the stats into the locker room. And the 1 year, Harper said, I got something for you, Bob, over by my locker there. So I go over there. I bend down, he pours a bottle of champagne on me.
So during the championship celebration, a player actually poured champagne on top of your head.
Yeah.
All right. That's good stuff. I like that. So tell me about your game day activities. When do you arrive? What do you do to set up, so to speak, for your responsibilities as an official scorer?
Okay, I normally get here by 3. And then...
For a 7 o'clock tip.
See, and then I'm in with Neil and Hallam.
Okay.
We BS for an hour or so and talk about different things. Then I go, I got to pick up the programs that they put on the side for the press, the game notes, put them on a counter for the press. Then I take a stack of game notes to the visiting team and to the Bulls, to the players and the coaches and all that. Then about 6 o'clock, or a little before, I go and check to see if the referees that you get on the computer are the right ones. Then I go with the active list, active inactive list. I give one to each team, and they're supposed to have that for me about half an hour before the game, who's active, who isn't. And then they give me the lineups. I take them in. We make copies. I give copies to the two coaches, out to the table, to the guys that work there, and then Pam and all them will pass out all the others. And then I'm ready to go.
Now, has there ever been a disagreement with when you're at the scorer's table? Does an official come over, or does something happen, or are you in total control? It's your table.
If there's something that goes wrong, the official will come to me on timeouts, points, stuff like that. See?
You've got to be focused. I mean, you can't take your eye off anything.
No, you're right. And now, with the computer, when they put the stuff in there, and if him and Mark and I don't agree.
And Mark is?
The one who sits next to me, to my right.
Okay.
Who puts in everything in the computer. You got to go by the book.
So your word is gospel, so to speak. It is official, period. So, Bob, in your opinion, when you look at the 51 years of Bulls basketball, what comes to your mind?
Six championships. Six rings.
Time for a short break here on Chicago Bulls Live. Stay with us on WLS AM 890.
This is the new home of Chicago Bulls basketball. Hear every Chicago Bulls game here. WLS AM 890. Now back to the Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live. USA Today's Jeff Zilgit is the epitome of a fighter. Zilgit began working for USA Today back in 1995 and stayed on his NBA beat despite undergoing treatment for colon cancer. Zilgit, who was at the Bulls game last night, visited with Chuck Swirsky, telling us when he got started covering basketball.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a gym. Chuck, is sort of how it went. My dad was a high school basketball, baseball coach, and always wanted to be around sports. And then on top of that, I loved reading and writing. And so at a certain age, I also realized that my athletic skills, were capped at a certain point. And so I wasn't going to do much more than high school athletics, but I wanted to be around the game. And as you know, there are lots of ways to do it. You can be on the team side of things or on the journalistic side of things, and I ended up on that side.
Okay, so give me an idea as far as USA Today and your employment there and how that started.
Well, USA Today is owned by a company called Gannett, and I worked at a couple Gannett papers in Michigan. Started off at a smaller one when you talk about the Great Lakes, the other side. I worked at a small paper in Port Huron, Michigan, Lake Huron, then worked at a paper in Lansing, Michigan. And then, things just transpired where you make connections and you get to know people and ended up at USA Today.
All right. Well, here you are. You're in a career, very visible, obviously, on a national basis, covering the National Basketball Association. And as you know, life takes different twists and turns. And let's get to that point in your world.
It was during the 2015 finals, Chuck. I did not feel well. And I got back from the finals and kept, for lack of a better word, complaining. And my wife said, if these things bother you that much, you need to go find out what's going on. And at that point, was diagnosed with colon cancer. Had surgery, a favorable prognosis at that point. My lymph nodes were free of cancer, and there was a 10 to 20% chance of recurrence. I like those numbers at that point. And yet, I rolled the dice, and that 10 to 20% chance came up when I was diagnosed with colon cancer that metastasized or spread to the liver in September of 2016. Had liver surgery at that point to remove the lesions or small tumors. The doctor who described it said, and it is a nice description, it was about two small ice cream scoops of my liver were removed during the operation. And at that point, it was determined that chemotherapy was the best course of action to make sure that any existing cancer cells were eliminated. And I'm in the middle of that treatment right now.
So what has been the feedback you've received when you went public?
The support has been overwhelming, and I mentioned that to you off air, Chuck. It is a paradox because I would prefer not to be in this situation, and yet I also would not have had the experience of feeling that overwhelming support, which helps me take the next step. I've said it often, I don't do this alone, whether it's family, friends, strangers, associates, every little bit helps because, for anyone who's out there has been touched by cancer in some form or fashion, and the chemotherapy treatments are not easy, and you need that support to take the next step. And the initial thought of going public with it was, one, we wanted to keep our family and friends updated because we couldn't constantly be in contact with all of them. And then at the same token, that there are people who were asking in that NBA community that you're talking about. And there's a side note to this is maybe this helps someone discover something early, because the key in all this, and I've been fortunate both times, early detection is the key, and it's your best chance of either getting cured from it or helping you live a longer life. And if anyone learns from this, if you have a family history and you know about it, it's worth talking to your doctor about and getting a step ahead of it as much as you can. And so those are a couple reasons as well that, you know, we've decided to share our story.
I'm not going to let you go without asking a basketball question. The two best teams you've seen all year in their respective conferences, give me a winner in the East and West.
Oh, man, I know this is going to be the easy way out, but by the time teams play seven-game series throughout the playoffs, I still think it's going to be Cleveland and Golden State.
That's Chuck Swirsky with USA Today basketball writer Jeff Zilgit.
As we continue here on Chicago Bulls Live, we now present Anthony Morrow, the Bulls veteran who came over in that trade with Oklahoma City for Taj Gibson and also Doug McDermott. Here's Chuck Swirsky with more.
So, Anthony, for our listeners on the Bulls Radio Network that have seen you play over the years, but certainly really are now starting to get a chance to get to know you, tell us a little about yourself, where you grew up, and how you developed your passion for the game.
I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina, West Charlotte, North Carolina. I went to Charlotte Latin High School, went to Georgia Tech. It's my ninth year in the league. I traded midseason from Oklahoma City. And it's been great here so far. My passion of the game just came from, you know, just growing up, you know, North Carolina, man. It's like blue collar, you know, blue chip colleges, you know, watching North Carolina, Wake Forest, NC State, all the teams up there in the ACC. That's how I grew my love for the game, man. So it's just been that. I always wanted to go to an ACC school. I was blessed enough to do that. I went to Georgia Tech. And just to compete in the ACC, that started, you know, a different level of intensity for me in terms of the game.
You know, because you were such a terrific high school player in North Carolina, was it tough leaving the state to play at Georgia Tech?
Absolutely. It was tough. You know, I definitely wanted to go to North Carolina school. But, you know, it just didn't work out like that. But it worked out way better in the long run for me. Playing for Coach Hewitt, Paul Hewitt, Coach Charlton Young, and all the guys and staff and all my friends who I'm still friends with now, former players, Jared Jack, Will Bynum and guys like that. It was great, man. I got a chance to learn how to work on my game and fall in love with the craft, and you know, just took off from there.
You know, Anthony, you're undrafted. You go to Golden State, and you lead the NBA in three-point shooting your rookie year. First time in the history of the NBA, that has happened for a rookie. When you look back at your first year in the league and what you accomplished, what do you think?
I just thank God, first of all. But I think about, you know, all the stuff that I did in high school and in college, late nights, put myself through drills where I felt like I was killing myself. You know, everything came to it all came to fruition. And I always pride myself when I say every day around the young guys, you know, it's process over outcome. I'm a process guy. You got to fall in love with the process. Fall in love with the grind. Once you do that, you don't worry about the outcome of the game. It's going to take care of itself.
Yeah, and you had an NBA jersey on. You can still to pursue your goals of getting better year after year, no matter the team. What have you learned about yourself in your professional experience in the NBA?
You know, just the things that my mother and my father instilled in me, my grandmothers, that they instilled in me, you know, those things very applicable to the NBA and any profession. You know, hard work, work ethic, praying, grinding, no excuses, you know, just simple basic stuff that if you take advantage of it, at the end of the day, it's not always pretty, but at the end of the day, everything will work itself out. So just with me, just with the young guys, I always tell them, you got to fall in love with it, can't fall in love with the lifestyle, can't fall in love with the money. All that stuff will take care of itself. You fall in love with the grind, and you know, you look up, and everything's right there that everybody else want anyway. So it's just about falling in love with it.
You know, finally, you know, I mentioned this on the radio last night when you came into the game, how professional you are. You haven't played. All of a sudden, you play against Philadelphia, then you don't play, and now you played last night. And it's a tribute to you that you have always remained ready. And it's just not being ready. It's in a position to shoot, taking the right type of shot. How has it been over the last few weeks since you've been here, knowing that, okay, I may not play for a week, and then all of a sudden my number's called?
Oh, it's part of it. Like I said, it's part of the grind. You know, whatever your role is, I've been in almost every role I've needed to play in 9 years. I've been a starter, I've been a six man, I've been at the end of the bench, I've been inactive. You know, so you just got to be ready for whatever. But as long as you're taking care of what you need to take care of, stay in the gym, stay in shape, keep praying, keep working. You know, don't make any excuses for anything that's going on. When your numbers call, you're ready. That's the only thing you can control. So that's what it's about.
Okay, one final question. You've been gracious with your time. Putting the Bulls aside, let's not even talk personnel with the Bulls. What player have you played with that's had the most impactful meaning to you, maybe on the court, off the court, that you've really locked into?
Probably had to say Steven Jackson, on and off the court. You know, I know he had a reputation for doing some crazy stuff or whatever, but at the end of the day, one of the most loyal guys, one of the most professional guys, business-wise, amazing. You know, he put me onto a lot of things on and off the court that I really still use now. It's been other guys as well, but Steven Jackson really showed me the ropes and took me under his wing. And, you know, he accepted me. You know, he accepted me and he said, look, you like to work. And I like to work, so let's get in the gym. No matter what, we're going to match up today. Let's go to dinner after that. We go somewhere and hang out. Let me talk to you about this. You got this going on. We're going to holler at you about that. So it was always not everything I wanted to hear, but I needed that discipline, you know, and just that voice. You know, he got a strong presence, and I needed that, so it was great. Probably Steven Jackson for sure.
That was awesome. Anthony, thank you.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
That's all the time we have for this edition of Chicago Bulls Live. Many thanks to the Bulls podcast, Timeout Bulls, driven by Lexus and available on iTunes. Our executive producer of Chicago Bulls Live is Dave Zaslowski. Many thanks to Tyler Bravo. I'm Steve Cashel for Chuck Swirsky saying so long. Talk with you again next week for another edition of Chicago Bulls Live here on WLSAM 890.